Let's get going. My name is Łukasz Pawłowski. That's a mouthful. It's originally Polish, but I got a little mnemonic that helps you remember. It's like finding money in your pocket. Woo cash. So that's who I am. I've been on the reporting services team since the very, very beginning. So I got hired maybe in February of 2001 or so, and I've been with the reporting services team ever since. So right now, I actually own all the components that do report design for RDL reports. So I own the report designer, the report builder, and the viewer control. In the past, I've worked a lot on the server side. So if you've seen my blog in the past, or you've seen me at presentations, you'll have seen me doing a lot of server kind of stuff. So feel free to ask me any kind of questions. One thing that I'll ask you, though, is that if one of the questions is a little bit off topic for the slide content that I'm trying to go do, maybe I'll ask you to hold that question until the end. Okay, and then we'll try to come back to it. Okay, so fantastic. Let's get into it. If I go the right way. So what I'd like to do with you guys today is I'd like to make sure that when you walk out of this room, I've covered four major things. Right. So the first one is to make sure that you deeply understand reporting services' place in the overall Microsoft BI stack. I want you to understand the mission that we're on, what we're trying to accomplish, and how what we're trying to accomplish will, in fact, help you do your job better. Second one is I want you to come away being able to quickly identify and articulate what are the major capabilities that we've added in the SQL Server 2012 reporting services and describe some of their benefits. I want you to have seen all of those major capabilities through demos, so we'll be going through a lot of demos. And lastly, I won't cover this in a lot of detail, but it's in the slide deck. There's a whole bunch of resources in the slide deck that you can go follow. I'll skip over them very, very quickly at the end of the session, but that will give you something to take home with you. So before we get going, who here is in IT Pro? Okay, they're very interesting. How about a BI professional? Interesting. Developer? Very interesting. Business user. Wow. Some of you didn't raise your hands. Can you shout, someone who wasn't here, could you shout, or didn't raise your hand, could you shout out who you think you are in terms of, your role?
Boss.
DBA, okay, boss.
Administration.
Administration, okay, great. Thanks very much. So I'll try to tailor the content a little bit more to some of the developers, because I think that's one of the things which I see there's a lot of folks in the presentation around developers, so I'll talk a little bit more about that. Fantastic. Who here has SQL Server 2000 reporting services deployed in their environment? Ooh, brave souls. Okay. 2005. Yeah, 2008. Okay, 2008 R2. Okay, 2012. Oh, very nice. Okay, great. So let's take a look at what's going on with reporting services in 2012. The first place to start is what we've done in the past, right? So I think one of the first things to say is that we've been on a multi-year, multi-release mission. And that mission has been to bring reporting capabilities to the broad IT audience, but also to all of the audiences within an organization, right? And so the big key thing that we did in 2008 R2 was around providing a lot of capabilities for our RDL offering around operational reports. We added all sorts of things for IT so that you could have shared data sets and cache refresh plans to manage the access to underlying data sources better. We added component library, or the report parts capability, that allows people to build standard parts of reports and then build them out into other reports and integrate them into other reports much more easily. So we really invested deep on all of those capabilities around the lifecycle for the RDL reports. Now, one of the big challenges, as with any release, we had to choose our battles, right? At the very beginning of that release, we looked at all of the requirements across all of our workloads, and we identified two major ones that we thought were really pivotal. The ad hoc report design space, so this is about allowing business users to create reports and get the answers that they need, and also the ability to create alerts, the ability for people to go view a report and then create an alert and get an email or a notification of some sort. Unfortunately, we were going so fast, we just could not deliver a quality product in those areas in the 2008 release. And so that's the first thing to keep in mind when we start talking about what we delivered in 2012. So before we get into the actual capabilities, I did want to make sure that you understood the overall Microsoft Business Intelligence stack. right? Because I think that reporting services plays an increasingly pivotal role, and increasingly it's a part of a larger ecosystem. So first off, the Microsoft Business Intelligence Stack is based off of the idea that you can get your data from any kind of data source, right? So whether it's a SQL Server analysis services, you know, a tabular model, but even the Oracle's SAP BWs, the Teradata's, the Netezza's, and so forth of the world, you're able to pull all that stuff together, and you're able to build out a set of artifacts with middleware services that we provide out of the SQL Server org. Right, and these are the analysis services, reporting services, data quality services, and so forth of the world. Right, all that stuff comes within the box inside SQL Server when you buy one of those SQL Server licenses. And this is a very important pivotal piece of our platform in that it also gives you flexibility, because when you integrate and you build out these artifacts, you're able then to put whatever front-end tools you want on top of them. Now, we provide tools, and we're providing tools directly integrated within SharePoint. And the reason for that is what we believe is that information workers, right, and business users, there's lots of them out there. And they all want to get at data. They want to be able to move forward, make decisions quickly, and so forth. And this we see, SharePoint we see, as a great place for information workers to collaborate with each other, to consume data, to find data, and for IT folks to manage access to data and gain visibility into data. The second aspect of that is that we provide tooling in familiar tools. So you'll see if you've looked at, who's used PowerPivot? Yeah, so PowerPivot's in Excel. And the reason for that is because we want to provide tooling for business users so that they can get their job done in familiar tools, so they don't have to do a whole bunch of learning. I think that's a key aspect of when you look at what we delivered in reporting services in 2012. It's a great framing sort of to put in on that. Okay, so that's the Microsoft BI stack. So now let's talk a little bit about SQL Server 2012. Of course, reporting services is part of SQL Server. And, you know, SQL Server is, as a division, you know, is much more than just the database engine. But we do frame our releases in terms of major pillars. And in this time around, it was mission critical, breakthrough insight, and cloud on your terms. And we're going to spend all of our time, or the vast majority, talking about the breakthrough insight piece. And I'll go into that in a second. But before we do, I also want to mention that reporting services in SQL Server 2012 gains advantages because we're in the overall SQL Server ecosystem. So if we talk about mission critical, you will have seen at some of the demos where you had a report that was hooked up to a readable secondary, which was offloading the query load from the primary OLTP system. You saw things like the column store index, where you took a chart that used to run in several seconds and it ran sub-second. Those are advantages that reporting services gets because the folks did the always-on inside SQL Server and were able to use the SQL client underneath the covers to go access. Likewise, on the cloud on your terms, there's two offers that we've released just recently. So first, we released a platform as a service offer, which is the Windows Azure SQL Reporting Service. And it's essentially a pay-as-you-go reporting service. So if you have all of your existing RDLs, you can just upload them to the cloud and run them on a pay-as-you-go basis, which is just phenomenal in terms of flexibility for you if you have spiky reporting loads or if you're an application developer. And we really think that that service is going to really, really help the developers in this room to build reports into their cloud-based applications. The second part of that is around the infrastructure as a service offer that was just announced last week. Now, that one's still in preview. It's not fully supported yet. But what we did was we also provide a virtual machine that has reporting services installed on it so that you can very quickly get reporting services and all of SQL Server running inside that infrastructure as a service offer. And we think that one's very compelling because that one allows you to connect a virtual machine in the cloud to on-premises data using the Brooklyn networking technology. And that's going to be transformational for folks because one of the biggest challenges we see with folks moving to the cloud in the BI space is that all the data is on-premises, and people are very leery about moving that into the cloud. So with that said, let's talk about Breakthrough Insight. Breakthrough Insight is a very interesting pillar because it is at the sort of nexus of a bunch of trends. Trend number one is that there's a lot of data out there. And I think year on year, I see some people shaking their heads up and down. I can't shake my head up and down because my mic will start doing bad things. So I'll just sort of do this. And there's a lot of data. And there's a couple of things going on with that data. There's a lot more every single year. There's twice as much this year as there was last. The second part about it is that people know that data is a resource. And the data as a resource is something that you don't necessarily want to delete. And so building up the stewardship of that data, having a set of technologies that allow you to steward that data into ways that you can expose that data to users is very, very important. So the second aspect of this is around users. How many business users are there for every IT pro? I bet you there's a lot. And the funny thing about business users is they're impatient. They have a real job to get done. And what they want to do is they want to get their data, get their insight, and move on. And if IT can't keep up, they'll go around IT. And the challenge has been that those go-around solutions cause all sorts of trouble for the IT folks. Someone builds up a custom line of business application off in some department and then leaves the company. IT gets called and is left holding the bag when that thing goes south, right? This is a very challenging situation. Now, the great thing about the breakthrough insight focus that we have is that it's really at the nexus of both of those trends. Because what we're trying to do is we're trying to provide a set of tools and a platform that allow you to both manage the IT side of the shop, give business users self-service tools that they're able to use to get their answers, and we'll be talking a lot about that in this session. But at the same time, you're able to monitor those users, and you're able to see them within SharePoint so that you can actually take control if something becomes popular. So you can go right on in there, and what you can do is when you watch usage, right? And you see, oh, that workbook is very popular at the end of the month. I wonder what's in there. So then you can go take a look inside. You have the visibility with our tools that you didn't have before. And so I think that the breakthrough insight is a very key, pivotal place for us as we think about BI. I'm going to spend a lot of time about the data visualization part and the rapid data exploration. I'm going to talk about it in three different ways, and we'll get to that here now in a second. So let's talk about what reporting services did. Hopefully at this point, you sort of understand the BI landscape. You understand that, you know, Microsoft BI is about heterogeneous data sources, middleware shipped out of SQL Server, and then end user tools that align strongly with Office experiences and with SharePoint, right? Also, the focus on the breakthrough insight. So let's talk about what we did in 2012. So the first thing was we refocused on building out a brand new, stunning data visualization and presentation experience aimed at business users. We call this PowerView. Who's seen a demo of PowerView in this conference? It's amazing. Some people didn't raise their hand. That's fantastic. You'll see it for the first time, and hopefully you'll clap and holler, and everyone else will say, oh, okay, fine. But PowerView is really, really important because what it does is it allows business users to answer their own questions at the pace that they want to answer their questions. And it allows them to share and collaborate and present those insights as stories that they can share with their compatriots and other folks that they work with. The second part is around proactive intelligence. This is really about helping business users and information workers deal with the data overload that they face. We all know that people expect, in an internet society, people expect instant responses. They expect people to be on top of stuff. And if you walk into a meeting without knowing that something critical happened, in some cases, your career can suffer. So now, what are the tools that are available for information workers and for business users to overcome that challenge? And that's really where we focused our end user alerting capability. And lastly, we recognize that, as with any platform, deploying that platform, managing that platform, configuring that platform, those things are costs. And so with each release, we try to focus and make sure that we're delivering an easier experience. And this release, we focused directly on our SharePoint integration. And we totally revamped our SharePoint integration. On the very surface, it looks not much changed from before. But underneath, the guts are totally new, and it's going to allow you to have better performance, easier configuration, and it's going to work with your SharePoint administration workflows significantly better. All of this together is prioritized based off of our commitment to the managed self-service business intelligence scenario, which allows you to roll out business intelligence solutions to your business users with the knowledge that when it comes time, you can take control of those, understand what they are, and manage them in an enterprise way. Okay? Let's go on. So let's start in on empowering users. So this is going to be a presentation in three parts. First part's going to be about empowering users. Second part's going to be about pervasive insight with a small cameo from some rendering extensions. And then we're going to talk about increasing efficiency. So let's get going. So what is PowerView? PowerView, at the outset, the thing to remember about is it's an interactive data exploration, visualization, and presentation experience. We really labored about what to call it because we've talked, other folks have mentioned it to us, and we've talked about it ourselves as ad hoc reporting. But we believe that PowerView has gone beyond what ad hoc reporting is to be a really compelling business tool so that business users are able to go find their data and then share and collaborate and present that data very, very easily. It's cross-browser and therefore cross-platform, and so that allows you to go ahead and deploy it with no client install. It's just a Silverlight component. And then it's also easily managed and discoverable because what you can do is when it's running within SharePoint, it's using a tabular model underneath the covers, and that tabular model can be managed by you through the capabilities the analysis services provided. We also provide capabilities here for doing presentations so that when you have a PowerView report, you can immediately go full screen and make it and present it. You can also export it to a PowerPoint presentation. And let's go take a look at all of that. So I'm going to go and cover three things in this demo. Part number one is around designing PowerView reports. So I'm going to take a report. I'm going to show you a pre-made one. I'm going to show you how I create it. And hopefully that won't take very long. Second one is around storytelling. I'm really going to emphasize how you tell stories with PowerView. And the last one is around the role of IT in PowerView. I think this is one of the challenges, or one of the parts that people don't really talk a lot about, but I'll give you a couple of hints and pointers around that as well. Here we go. So I'm going to start in SharePoint. Now, what I have here is a standard SharePoint site. It's deployed in a farm. It has reporting services installed. It has the reporting services add-in for SharePoint installed on the front end, the report server service on the back end. And it's got the PowerPivot integration so that I can upload an Excel workbook. And what you're looking at here is a list of all the workbooks and all of the PowerView reports that are up on this server. Now, you know, there's different reports. Some of them work, some of them don't. It actually mirrors most corporate IT deployments. But you can kind of scroll through them, which is really nice. Now, in terms of, this is just an Excel workbook that has a PowerPivot model inside of it. Now, what I want to draw your attention to is right over here. So I'm just going to go ahead and zoom in on it so that you can all see. So right here, if I have an Excel workbook saved by some user, so some user just created an Excel workbook with a model to solve their own problem, they can immediately start creating a PowerView report directly off of that. I'm also going to show you another way to create a PowerView report, and that's the one that I'm going to use, which is over here. If I go into Shared Documents, I'm going to come into this is just file navigation. You can see that we have a Movilla data source here, or Movlia data source here, and you have a Create PowerView Report option hanging off of it. So this is where if you were an IT shop and you built a standard enterprise tabular model, you'd provide it out here, and then you'd be able to go ahead and allow business users to go create their own reports on it. Of course, business users are they work kind of incrementally. So often what they do instead is they just open something someone else has created and modify it to get their job done. And that's what I'm going to do right now. So this is a PowerView report. It launches in a Silverlight control. It's highly interactive right out of the gate. You've probably seen some of these things in some of the other demos, or just in terms of the interactivity. It may take a second or two to wake up, but when it does, things will sort automatically. The key thing about this is you notice that every time I click, data changes right in the surface. And that's kind of a core principle that we designed PowerView around. This is the ability for business users to immediately see the data that they're working with. So let's go in and let's take a look at editing this report. So in this particular case, the report has two views already, right? So you can have multiple views. What I'm going to go ahead and do is I'm going to go create a new view, and I'm going to start from scratch. So let's go build out our first PowerView report. So you'll notice, first of all, that was not me. So the first thing that you'll notice is that the overall user experience, the toolbar, it looks like Office. And that's so that business users are placed in a familiar environment, so that we minimize the amount of new learning that they have to do. A lot of the power of PowerView actually comes from tabular models, and those are tabular models created in PowerPivot or through the tabular model project type in Visual Studio. Okay, so that's what I have here. These are all the tabular models. And what you'll see here is that, you know, within the model, I can go navigate the model. And as a business user, I can go here and I can go explore what's inside this model. Now, one of the great things about PowerView is that exploring is not like it was in the past. Exploring is like, I just clicked. Did you see that? I just clicked on movies. That's all I did. And suddenly I have a stunning visual presentation of that data. The model designer decided which are the fields that will show up in this default view. So there's someone who's designing the model can create the best kind of experience here for their end users. But it was very, very quick to get something very interesting here. So I can, of course, go ahead and filter that if that's the data that I want. I can go ahead and sort it and so forth. But one of the great things about PowerView is it's incredibly flexible. So what I can do is I can go ahead and create kind of contact cards. Or maybe I don't want that. I'll just go ahead and create a set of tiles. So I'll group by each one of the movies. And what you'll see here is that everything in PowerView is very, very fast and fluid and instant. And here we are. So now what I have is I have a nice little presentation here for my little report. Now what I can do is I can go and create and make this a card. And so now I can go and I can create a little view of that particular movie. And now, of course, as I move through the movies, you have Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag, because, you know, who doesn't like that movie, right? So here's Eight Heads in a Duffel Bag. You'll notice that the stars came in automatically. You'll notice that the image came in automatically. I didn't have to do much to go create that. So what I'm going to go ahead and do is I'm going to go build out a report. And now, in this particular case, I'm very much interested in how do movie sales work across regions and also, again, across the different kinds of genres. So first thing I'm going to do is we're right on in here. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go and stick in the region. So you'll notice that the region just loads right on in automatically along with the map. And now what I can do is I can just come in and pull in sales information. Let's go pull in the number of downloads and the amount of revenue that came in for this particular movie. You'll notice that I did nothing here except click a couple of times. And immediately I'm able to create a filtered view of that particular movie broken out by regions. That's pretty darn cool. Of course, I can go and sort that if I wanted to and whatnot. And of course, it still remains fully interactive. So as I move things around, it all updates, which is great. So now let's take a look a little bit differently. Let's take a look about movies by genre. Right, so I'm very much interested. I'm sorry. Let's continue with the region theme, and let's build out a little something different. So let's go ahead and pull out the sales information again. Let's go pull this in. And now what I want to do is I just wanted to create a column chart, and I'm going to just go ahead and create a clustered column chart here. And again, everything is fully interactive all the way as I go. Right, so I'm just going to go click in on Southern Region on revenue, and I'm going to be able to see how this particular movie did in the southern region, right? And this up here, it got filtered also. So only the movies available in the southern region were visible there. So let me go unfilter that, and you'll get the full view again. Now let's go break it out by the various categories. And one of the interesting questions is, you know, how do the various categories do across time? So, you know, we have comedy, and we have horror, and we have all sorts of different kinds of movies, right? But how do they actually do at the box office, and how do they do in terms of internet downloads? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to just pull this information in here. I'm going to say downloads and revenue. I'm just going to go ahead and pull that in. Now, of course, it's really hard to see any trends within a table. So what I'm going to do is I'll just go make that a scatter plot. Now, one of the funny things about this is that I actually want to know, like, how many titles? Because it's one thing to see that, you know, any individual value is here. It's also interesting to see how many movies contribute to that. So, for example, what you can see here is that immediately I can see here, and let me, you know what, it's a little hard to see, so let me just zoom in on it. You know what, I think it's still kind of a little bit harder to see, so maybe what I need to do is I just need to go into full screen view here for you. So, okay, great. So what you can see is that comedy did quite well in terms of revenue. This is revenue over here. And it did quite well. It actually was great in terms of downloads. But you see that there's no really key, you know, killer movie that came out. Now, sci-fi is sort of interesting here because sci-fi has the most revenue and a fair number of downloads, but very, very few movies. So that's already an interesting insight that I was able to pull out with just a relatively few clicks. So let me haul out of here. Actually, before I go, let me just show you that if I had different takes on this data, I could just go ahead and present it right here from within the PowerView experience. So let's come back in here and let's continue on. So now the next thing I wanted to do is I wanted to take a look at how this information varies over time. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to go create a play axis. And the way I'm going to do that is I'm just going to take the month data, I'm going to throw it onto the play axis. And so now what I do is I actually have the ability to play that data over time once it loads in. And that's going to allow me to spot trends and how is the data moving over time. This is something that in a traditional reporting tool, certainly in RDL, it's very, very difficult to do. But business users now have the ability to just go ahead and do this. And so if I just go ahead and pull this out, you see the comedy is out to a head start. And it's going, it's going, it's going, it's really... And then sci-fi comes out of nowhere. And look who wins the prize at the top here. Sci-fi takes the whole deal, right? How did that happen, right? So now the question is, does anyone know what happened right around 2010 that could contribute to that trend? Avatar? Who else thinks Avatar? Yeah, we got a few avatars. Who thinks something else? Are you all asleep? Yeah, there you go. So let's go ahead and click on that, right? So all I need to do is I just need to go click on that thing, and what you'll see once this loads in is that it is, in fact, Avatar, right? So Avatar contributed the most to that particular trend, right? And what you'll see is that you can also see this sort of trend line here. And there we go. Here's our Avatar. And you really got to see the highly visually integrated thing here. So now, when I'm done with this report, it's really nice. But now, when people decide to share data when business users decide to share data, oftentimes what they do not worry about this. This is intentional. You have to save the report first. And you have to go through a couple of dialogues to do it. So when they want to share data, they really share it in PowerPoint. And you go to a boardroom, you go to a presentation, and that's really where you're presenting all of your data. So now in this particular case, what I've done is I've just gone ahead and exported this PowerView report directly into a PowerPoint presentation. So TechEd Live for real. It turns out that I saved a couple of those named TechEd Live before, and so I just want to make sure that I don't have any name conflicts. Of course, if I can actually go find it, that would be wonderful. You know, I'm not going to spend much time on trying to find it. Here's one that I loaded a couple of moments ago. Mm-hmm. Here we go. So the great thing that you saw there was, number one, was that the images are directly within the PowerPoint. So even if you're offline, you can see those images. You can see the data that you were looking at. At the same time, if someone comes in and asks you a question, as they normally do, it's like, hey, why is that data like that? Or what happens if so-and-so was filtered like this and blah, blah, blah? Right, you can just go ahead and click to interact. And that immediately reduces the time it takes for you to get to the answer that the user wants. And of course, this just loads in Silverlight directly within PowerPoint and allows you to go have the exact same interactivity as you had in the client tool. And so you can go answer those questions without having to go back and say, you know, I'll talk to you tomorrow. I'll get the answer and call you. Right? So it's really about allowing business users to get the answers, find the answers, and also to communicate those answers and handle any secondary questions really, really quickly and get on with their decision making and their thought processes. So I think that's a really cool new capability within the overall BI stack. So now I did promise that I'd say, you know, talking about a little bit about telling stories. And I think that's this export through PowerPoint and the ability to go full screen in PowerView is all about being able to create those stories and be able to explain to others what the data is doing, what you saw in a highly interactive way so that you can convince them as well. The second part that I said that I was going to talk about a little bit was around the role of IT. So I think one of the things here is that, you know, as you use a PowerView, there's a lot of power within this model, right? And so that... there's several things that you need to be aware of. Number one is that business users need data, and they need real, truthful, accurate data that's up to date and so forth. So for the IT folks in the room, one of the things that you can expect to do, and I think you'll find it useful for yourselves as well, is to be able to create these tabular models and expose them to your users so that users can get their own insight. And you'll be able to make sure that those models are coming off the right data sources. The second aspect is that information workers will create their own models through Power Pivot. And so another thing that you should be aware of is that you should be taking a look at those things and making sure that when they do use Power View is very, very compelling, right? You want to make sure that they're using accurate data in their Excel workbooks as well, right? So I think that's one of the great things that you should be looking at. So let's hop out of the...
I have a question.
Sure. Yeah, so let's hop out. Let's go back to the presentation, and I'll take a question. Can you embed a Power View report as a SharePoint web part? Not right now. We're looking at that kind of capability. Okay. So let's continue on. So there's a lot of features in Power View, and I don't have the time to go through all of them. I hope I gave you a little bit of a quick run through. There's a session tomorrow that Sean Boone is giving on how to build stylish reports with Power View. I think you'll go and you'll get a lot of very interesting tips and tricks and cover a lot of the capabilities that are on this slide in that session. Let's talk a little bit about architecture, because of course we all like to know and understand what's going on underneath the covers. I did mention before that in order to use Power View, you have to be in SharePoint, and specifically you need to be in SharePoint 2010. In order to use Power View, you also need reporting services installed, and what that means is you need to have the reporting services add-in for SharePoint technologies installed on all the web front ends. You also need the reporting services shared service application running. Now, what the shared service application is, I'll talk about later in today's presentation, so I won't dive in too much. Now, at that point, there's a real question for you. Do you want users to be able to create Power Views off of Excel workbooks? If you do, then you also need the Power Pivot service that integrates within SharePoint. Now, if you only want to create your own tabular models and host them in Analysis Services Tabular Server, then you can just go ahead and deploy a tabular server, create data source files like what I showed you, whether those are RSDS files or whether they're the new BISM connection files, BISM connection files. And so that will allow your users to create Power View reports off of IT-created and managed models. Okay, and of course, all those models can go off any kind of data source, and Power Pivot as well as the tabular model project type allows you to pull data from all sorts of different data sources. Okay. So now, the next question that often comes up at this point is, how do I think about Power View? Right? Who's it for, and how does it affect the existing tools? And the way that I would suggest to you to think about it is that it is another tool in your toolbox. First, it's the solution for business users. So if you want to know like how to get business users over the hump of creating their own reports, Power View is the answer to that. The second part about that is a little bit more nuanced, though. Oftentimes in your regular day-to-day jobs, you need to analyze data too. And you need to go and figure out, hey, the business user came to me with some requirements, but they're not very clear. Do they want A or do they want B? The question is, how quickly can you go and prototype such a thing and put it in front of your business users for them to tell you whether you're on the right track? I think Power View and tabular models are a great enabler. It greases the wheel. It really reduces the overall effort that you have to do. So it's valuable even for the IT tool set. Okay. The other one is that there are operational reports. These reports run every day, week, month. They have to be consistent. They're integrated with line of business processes and so forth. So those kinds of reports, you're still going to want to create .rdl files around those. Right? That's really the way to do it. And finally, for the developers, we've chosen within Power View, and you'll see this in end user alerting as well. We've created solutions in SQL Server 2012. As opposed to platforms around those two capabilities. And what that really means for you is that in this release, you're not going to be able to embed the Power View within a web part, or you're not going to be able to create a Power View programmatically. And so that's something to bear in mind. Okay. So for them, you're going to continue shipping the report viewer control. Now, I don't have a lot of content about the viewer control, but because of the number of developers, I was actually a little surprised at how many developers are in the room. I did want to touch on a couple of points. So number one is that when we shipped Dev 10, the 2010 version of Visual Studio, we added report viewer controls that matched the SQL Server 2008 R2 version, right, in terms of the report processing capabilities. With Visual Studio 11, so the one that's in RC right now, you can go and try out the version of the report viewer controls that supports SQL Server 2012. Right? So that's something that I highly recommend you go download the RC candidate that's out there right now and go play with it. So overall, Power View is fills a huge gap. You know, we talked at the very beginning about what we wanted to accomplish with 2008 R2, and that ad hoc report design was a huge, huge cut for us. So we've really fulfilled that promise, and I think that you're going to see us continue to go down that path with more PowerView capabilities in the future. Now let's talk a little bit about pervasive insight. Pervasive insight, of course, is the ability for business users and information workers to just get on with their day so that they have a safety net around them that tells them what's important. Or if they need to go play with data, they're able to get all of the data that they need. So I'm going to talk about two things in this bucket. Number one, I'm going to talk about some rendering extension enhancements. And number two, I'm going to talk about the end user alerting capabilities we have added within SQL Server 2012. Great, so let's talk a little bit about rendering extensions. So one of the big challenges customers have had around reporting services is that our rendering extensions for Word and Excel were using the old binary formats that shipped a really long time ago in Office. And since then, around Office in 2007, Office released a new set of XML-based, ZIP-based formats that allowed you to have greater flexibility with larger payloads and also greater visual resolution. So I think one of the great things about the 2012 release is that we finally have rendering extensions for both Word and Excel. So especially around Excel, we've heard so many times that people hate that 60,000 row limit that's within Excel. So now you can have a million rows. The other thing about Excel is, you know, like if you really want to supersize Excel, that's where PowerPivot comes in, right? So hundreds of millions of rows in PowerPivot. So within our offer, you're able to have an Excel workbook in .xlsx format, and that's going to provide you some less limits, both in terms of the number of rows, the number of sheets you can have. Also, it adds additional colors. So we used to have some challenges around conversion of colors, and so you now get 24-bit colors, which is great. The last thing to say is some folks who export a lot of these files complain about network latency in terms of downloading them. The new zipped files are smaller because they're zipped, right? So it actually turns out to be more efficient for you as well. Okay, so that's all about rendering extensions. I mentioned that was going to be a little cameo. I'm not going to show that as a demo. The funny thing about we have a great PM on our team, Ricardo, who ran this improvement to go check this in, and unfortunately his demo was just showing the same thing next to the same thing, right? For which he got great applause, right? But I'm going to skip that in today's session. So the second thing I want to talk about is end-user alerting. So really, you know, we really talk about this from the viewpoint of what we heard customers telling us, where customers are dealing with information overload, right? There's so many reports they have to go look at on a daily basis nowadays, right? Where in the past it was a couple, two, three, five, now it's maybe 10 or so that they have to really monitor. And again, you know, if they miss something, then they can walk into a meeting and they can look, you know, kind of like out of it, right? And that can have significant impact on them or their organizations. So the question is, what are the set of tools that we provide that allow information workers to react proactively as soon as the data changes, or keep monitoring a broad set of data indicators that allow them to make sure they don't miss anything, nothing slips through their net? And I think that's really that's really where we've focused end-user alerting. So what we're providing with end-user alerting is a tool for information workers who view reports to create alerts so that they can get an alert when it matters to them. Now, this is an interesting sort of phraseology that I'm using, because there's another kind of alert, right? Who uses System Center? Yeah? You know those alerts about hardware disk space that come out? Right? Yeah. So those things I'd call sort of IT alerts. Those are push alerts that you get regardless of whether you really want to. Right? So these alerts, the ones that we've created for end user alerting with reporting services, are really focused on end users, business users, getting their job done faster. So really putting the control within the business users side to create the alerts that they want. And I'll show you what that looks like. It's really going to help overcome the data overload that people have in terms of the operational reports that they have to look at. Of course, it's designed for information workers, so we've kept the kinds of rules that we use. That would be bad. The kinds of rules that are available and the overall environment very straightforward, so that again, business users don't have to go learn a whole bunch of stuff to get up and running. So let's go dive into that. So what I'm going to show you here is I'm going to show you how to create and manage data alerts. I'm going to show you how to monitor data alerts. I'm going to show you how data alerts fit in the overall IT tool chest as well. So in order to do that, I'm going to go and I'm going to come back into SharePoint, which we'll get that going here. So the next thing to say, did that do what I wanted it to? It did not. Here we go. So we're going to be in SharePoint again for this demo. But before I do that, I just want to check the weather. And the reason I want to check the weather, who was here yesterday? Okay, oh, you were here yesterday. Please raise your hand. All right. Everyone was here yesterday, probably. So yesterday, around this time, there was very, very interesting weather, right? And I thought it was something to do with the demos people were showing. But this is the forecast I woke up to this morning, and I thought, gosh, wouldn't that be really, really nice? Now, of course, the weather gods are maybe not with me today. So let's go take a look at how well, we have a few rain showers. Earlier today, this was not looking promising. So what I did this morning was I went and I created a little report and I created a dashboard page. So what you see down here is you'll see a little weather report. Now this is a standard RDL reporting services report. And what I also did was I created a little dashboard page, because who doesn't like a dashboard page? So I'm going to call this the Storm Chasers Dashboard. So this is the report that comes out every single day for the storm chasers to go figure out where they should drive to see the best cool storm, right? Now, of course, a storm chaser doesn't want to get out of bed if there's no good storm. So they want a daily alert to send them a nice little thing saying, hey, where are the storm advisories around me? So the first part of the report, of course, shows local weather. So that's for Orlando. As you can see, partly cloudy is not exactly great. But we also have other weather news. Now, this one looks far more interesting. Now, unfortunately, this is also a very dangerous situation that's happening right now in Nebraska. But for the purpose of the demo, we're able to watch the tornado watch. Okay, so let's take a look at how we create a data alert. So I'm just going to come in here. This is a dashboard page. It hosts a report viewer control web part, just like any other SharePoint dashboard page. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go ahead and create a new data alert on that. Can you guys see that right in here? So this is a new data alert. So this report has a data source that contains stored credentials, and that's what you're going to need for reports that are able to use data alerts. So I'm just going to go ahead and click New here and zoom out before you get all confused. So now we've launched in the Alert Designer. Now Alert Designer is also a Silverlight component. It just downloads right away. And what we see all of the data that was within that report as a data feed. So I can see that we have two different feeds in here. I have local weather and I have severe weather. And what I can do is I can say, okay, well, let me say, let's create a it will be good today storm chaser report alert, right? And that just means that today is a good day. I can go see if I can find some thunderstorms in my local vicinity. So let's go ahead and let's take a look at current details. I'm going to say I'm going to say thunderstorm. Now, let me go ahead and zoom in on this a little bit. So I really wanted to show you just how easy it is to create an alert within the end user alerting capability. So of course, I'm able to see any of the fields that are available in my data feed. I'm able to use very straightforward data conditions here. These are all type bound, so you don't have to worry about things. If you want, you can go ahead and select from a list. In this particular case, these are the actual values, but that's not exactly what I wanted. Whoops. Or you can type in your own. Likewise, you can go ahead and you can compare against other fields. And you can, in some cases, you can go ahead and you can create, you know, a sort of in-list, so you can select from multiple things. But if you don't want that, you just go ahead and delete it. So it's very, very straightforward to go create an alert. Fantastic. So I'm just going to go ahead and zoom out of that so you can go see what's going on here. Nice. So the next thing that I need to do is I need to figure out my schedule, right? So within my schedule, I have several things that I can do. The first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to say, well, the default is daily. And I think that when we talk about end user alerting, we really talk about building a capability that's available for information workers to handle their normal sort of alerting cadence. So though we also support the ability to do, you know, hourly and minute alerts, we think the vast majority of folks will be doing daily or weekly alerts. And so I think that's something to bear in mind also on the IT side. If you want users to, and you message out to users that they have more frequent alerts, right, you're going to need to make sure that your report servers are ready for that. So fantastic. So automatically we have all of these things set out for us. And we have this very interesting little auspicious checkbox down here, which is send message only if alert results change. And that's essentially on by default. And what that does is it makes sure that we don't repeatedly spam you with messages when the actual data hasn't changed. Right? So you'll get one message, and then after that, we won't send it to you until the data actually changes. So it's kind of a nifty little feature that's built automatically. And if you don't like it, you, of course, can turn it off. Now, we automatically detect who you are based off of your SharePoint profile, which is really nice. We create a nice little subject for you. And then if you want to say, with a nice little description for yourself, or imagine you're building out an alert for your team, right? A small group of people. You might want to be able to put a little description in there so that they know what to do with that alert. Let's go ahead and save that out. So that's the first alert that I created. Now let's go create the second one. And this one I'm going to go through a little bit more quickly just so that you get the sense of just how quickly a business user can go ahead and use the tool. And hopefully my report hasn't timed out along the way. Otherwise, it's going to have to go run again. Here we go. So here's my severe weather, and you see that I get a lot more content here. And so what I'm just going to do is I'm going to say warning info and tornado. So at this point, what you'll notice is that I'm actually using lowercase here, right? And what you'll notice over here is that the tornado watch is uppercase. And that's actually another kind of nifty little thing we've done within this experience is to make sure this is very forgiving for information workers. It's case sensitive. It's case insensitive by default. So great. So let's go ahead and save that out. So fantastic. So that's creating an alert. It's very straightforward. It's available to you directly off of a report. Of course, it's available to you here. And also, if I were to go back into the SharePoint site, and I can go ahead and view it just when I directly view the report itself also. So the second part is around managing alerts. Now, there's two aspects to managing alerts, right? So the first aspect is around a user who's created alerts for themselves managing their own. So in this particular case, you know, we have it'll be good today, right? I also created another one earlier this morning for bring your umbrella. You know, we had some storm chasers one, right? Thundering a tech ed and so forth, right? So let's go do this. I'm going to just go right click and I'm going to say run. And that's my little straightforward way of running the alerts without having to wait for the schedule to kick off. It's also a great way if you don't know if the alert actually works for it to double check. So now it's going to take a couple of seconds for it to run. So now let's see. So, okay. So it will be good. Did not send an alert, but it has an updated status. Let's go take a look at that here. So here we are. So in this particular case, we ran the alert, but the message was not sent because there are no thunderstorms around Orlando. I wish that were not the case today. But then the other one, the weather report, which one was it? It seems to also have not run, which probably means that I misspelled tornado. But that's okay. So this is running. You'll see that I have a couple here that ran earlier today. So let's go ahead and go take a look at what those look like when we see them. So of course now, when the alert runs, what it's going to do is it's actually going to execute the report, it's going to get the data feed, and it's going to process the rules, and then it's going to determine whether it should send an email or not. Okay, so when the email comes out, it's going to come out in an email. Let's just go ahead and open that up. So here's an example of one of these ones that I created earlier, right? And so here we have a tornado watch, and I can see exactly the data that triggered the alert here. I can see who sent me the alert here, and I can send them back email if that's a problem that they're sending me alerts. I can also immediately link through to the actual Storm Prediction Center. I can see exactly where in Nebraska the challenge is happening. So I can get, as a storm chaser, I'm able to immediately find out should I be waking up today or should I be going to Starbucks for a coffee. Okay? So that's managing alerts. Now the next thing I wanted to show you very briefly is sort of like for IT, you know, where do you find alert information? So along with reporting services, there's a new alerting database, and I'll just show you that to you here. And just like with reporting services, we have, so this is the alerting database. It's managed by SharePoint, the shared service application. So I think the next thing is that within this database, there's an execution log view. And that view then provides you all of the information you need to go gain insight about which reports are actually running. So there's a whole bunch of information. I won't go into it in detail, but the idea here is that you're able to monitor which reports are being alerted on, and you're then able to take action in terms of optimizing, say, the caching settings for that report to make sure that it's running really quickly and it's not impacting your underlying system. Okay? So fantastic. Let's hop out of this demo and let's go back into the slides. Great. Perfect. So the overall workflow, I think I put this in here so that you'd have it as reference. The key thing is that when we actually go run the alert, we are running the report. And that means that there's going to be a report load that's going to happen on your overall reporting services server. And you're going to have to make sure that you understand what that load is, especially relative to the underlying data sources that that report is going off of. So in terms of for IT, there's a set of deployment things, right? So alerting comes with reporting services. So in order to get alerting, all you need to do is install reporting services in SQL Server 2012 in SharePoint integrated mode. All the configuration settings are stored within the SharePoint content config DB. I think we'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about the SharePoint stuff in a moment. In terms of monitoring, there's an execution log and the trace logs. This is, again, the trace log stuff is the same as in the shared service, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. We also provided a bunch of performance counters. I didn't have time to go through that in this demo, but that's available to you also so that you understand how alerting is doing in terms of whether it's actually working correctly or not. Great. So the next thing I wanted to just briefly touch on is that when you design a report, there's a couple little properties you should be tweaking. Who was at Bob Myers' session on building nice RDL reports? Hey, a handful. So there's a number of settings within the report definition that you should be aware of. Most importantly, data element name. Data element name allows you to define what the name of the field is within the data feed. And so that's going to allow you to control the experience better of what you saw when we saw that preview of the data for the data alerts. The second one is data element output. So that's actually going to allow you to determine whether a particular field is output or not. Some fields don't make sense. They'll confuse the user, so you can go ahead and turn those off. Likewise, you can if some data regions, like charts, produce fairly poor data feeds. And so what you can do is you can define a chart and a table, and you can say that for data renderers, only the table is shown and the chart is hidden, and vice versa for interactive renderers. And then you can get a data feed off the table, which will look a lot nicer for your data alerts. So a couple little tricks and tips. So that's end-user alerting and the insight piece. So let's talk a little bit about increasing efficiency. This is where we're going to talk about the SharePoint shared service architecture, and we're going to talk a little bit about what that looks like. So the first thing to say is that within reporting services in SQL Server 2012, we've built out a SharePoint shared service application. In the past, when you deployed reporting services, all the way through to the 2008 R2 release, what you actually got was you got a sort of standalone server that knew how to talk to SharePoint, and you had to manage that independently. Now, with SQL Server 2012, reporting services is fully integrated in the SharePoint application to your lifecycle. So things like the backup and restore of the report server databases happens through the SharePoint central admin site. Deploying nodes within reporting services across the SharePoint farm happens within central admin. Setting credentials, etc., managing configuration, it all happens within SharePoint. I think that's a huge efficiency for. Thank you. Thank you. So I think it's a huge thing for IT folks in terms of efficiency, especially those folks familiar with managing SharePoint. The second thing that we did was we really, really heard you. We heard the performance of SharePoint mode was not where it should be. We heard it loud and clear, and we spent a whole bunch of time raising the performance of SharePoint. And I'm really happy to say that now SharePoint integrated mode in SQL Server 2012 has the same performance as native mode. There's an itty-bitty overhead because there's like one more network hop that has to happen. But that will only affect the fastest of reports. So performance should not be an issue. If it was an issue in the past, I highly recommend you take a look at the new SharePoint mode in SQL Server 2012 and consider deploying it. The other thing to say is that overall performance of reporting services in SQL Server 2012 is better than performance of 2008 R2. So overall, you get a benefit regardless of which deploy mode you choose. And then the last thing is that all the setup happens of SharePoint happens within SQL Server setup. So you can just go through the installer, and it'll take you through, and you'll get up and running fairly quickly. After you do the install, you do have to go and configure a shared service application within SharePoint, within Central Admin, and I'll show you where that is here in a second. So let's take a look at that. Let's take a look at Central Admin UI and ULS log support. Great. So the first thing I'm going to do here is I'm going to launch SharePoint Central Admin, which is right on in here. And when this loads in, what we're going to do is we're going to go take a look at the application management. Who is a SharePoint administrator in this room? Yeah, just a couple of hands. Okay, so this is going to be fairly new to folks. Unfortunately, Central Admin likes to fall asleep. Key thing for you is if you want to use reporting services in SharePoint integrated mode, you're going to have to install the SharePoint add-in, so the reporting services add-in for SharePoint 2010 technologies. On all of the web front ends and whatever machine is hosting your central admin, right? And that way you actually get this UI. I had someone earlier in the conference come up to me and say, I can't deploy it. Everything's installed except on his central admin box. So make sure you install that there. Once you do that, you're going to be able to go in, you're going to be able to manage web application. Whoops, did I click the wrong one? Let's go and manage service applications. So I go into manage service applications. And this is going to load you a list of service applications. And what you're going to see in here is that there's this really nice one that I really like. It's called the RS application. It's fully integrated within SharePoint mode. And so when I click on this one, I'm able to go and configure all of the settings. These settings used to be within the configuration tool. And so if you're a SharePoint admin in the past, you actually had to go to some other tool to get your job done. Well, now it's all in here. There's one additional thing you need to be aware of, which is this provision subscriptions and alerts. When we're in SharePoint, SQL Agent is disabled by default because SharePoint doesn't use it. So you're going to have to go enable SharePoint, and this page is new and unique to SharePoint integrated mode, and it's going to help you get through that. Okay? But all the other settings, you know, the basic system settings and so on and so forth are all available right here for you. Now let's go back a little bit, and SharePoint has a interesting sort of UI experience. So that was, if I click through, I get to the manage option here. But I can also look at the properties of the service application. So the properties of the service application are very interesting because they define things like which account does the report server run as, right? So for example, here we have an application pool. Now when we're in a shared service application, we're actually running inside IIS or fully managed as part of the SharePoint site. So SharePoint owns its own site, and it manages app pools, it manages passwords. You even have the ability to use a registered account. And what that means is that SharePoint takes care of password chain name changes for you. So you get the full ecosystem that SharePoint provides, and it applies to your report server, which I think is a huge benefit. It'll really make your lives a little bit easier. So the other thing to say down here is you have a database server. And you'll notice that within the database server, the database names have grown a little bit from the past. And this GUID is a really nice GUID. We love this GUID because this GUID means that this database is owned and managed by SharePoint. And what that means is that if you go and back up your SharePoint databases, this database gets backed up also. Remember that when we deploy in SharePoint integrated mode, the report server database is kind of a slave. It contains some information, but it's linked back to the content database. And that content database is the master. It actually contains all of the report definition files. So when you do backup and restore, you have to make sure you have both of those databases. Now, when this is integrated within SharePoint, you're able to do that a little bit more effectively and easily, directly using the SharePoint capabilities. Okay?
Is the upgrade move the RDLs from
Yeah, so the question is, does the upgrade move the RDLs in from the report server database into the content database? Yeah. So the way to think about it is this. The RDLs are files. Files are stored in the content database. Things that are like reports are metadata, like subscriptions and you know and things of that and schedules and things of that nature, those are stored in the report server database. So when you do an upgrade, the existing report server databases are added into the databases that SharePoint manages. So you don't have to do anything. It just kind of moves along and we take care of it for you underneath the covers. Okay? So great. So what you'll find here is that all of the settings that you need are right in here. And if you want to go and you want to go and figure out, you know, which services manage services on server. So this is another good one to take a look at. And you'll, what you'll find here is that the reporting services is right on in this list. So you'll see that here is reporting services. And let's just go zoom in on that. And what you can do here with reporting services, if I can pull it over, you can start it and stop it directly within the SharePoint experience. So again, you get all of those benefits from being within SharePoint. Wonderful. So the next thing that I wanted to show you very briefly is the log files. So one of the great things that happened with SQL Server 2012 is that we actually integrated all of the reporting services capabilities directly within the SharePoint log files. So for this case, you know, here's a ULS log. Now it's far too small for you to read it yet, but here's reporting services. So all of our log files are echoed right here. And what that means is that you can do things now, like when a user encounters a problem in SharePoint, they get a little correlation ID, this little GUID. You can go and all of the report server tasks, everything report server does, is wired up to that same correlation ID. So if you need to investigate what problem happened and where report server was part of that problem potentially, you can go and find that information significantly faster than you could in the past. Okay, so that's basics for managing. We also did a whole bunch of things around PowerShell commandlets and so forth that allow you to deploy reporting services. I'm not going to get into that. The setting configuration. Configuration for the shared service application is in the config DB for SharePoint. What that means is that it actually deploys automatically to all the SharePoint nodes that are running reporting services. So I think that's really a nice capability as well. Let's hop back into the slides here real quick. And let's carry forward. So now let's talk a little bit about architecture. And I think what you'll notice here at the very top is that the overall architecture hasn't changed very much, right? So you still have a web front-end component. You still have a reporting services add-in for SharePoint technologies. And that add-in has to be installed on all the web front-ends and also the machine that's running your SharePoint Central Admin. Now you also have a back-end tier. The big thing that has happened here is that this back-end tier has moved. It's no longer a separate Windows service that's run and managed independently of SharePoint. Now it is a shared service application. And I think the full terminology is rather cumbersome. It's a shared service application instance. Okay? And that thing is running inside an app pool within IIS, and it's fully managed by SharePoint. And so that's kind of an important thing. And where this comes in, I think, is a number of places. So first off, when we look at the front end has basically the same components as it had in the past. You know, it's got a UI component, and that UI component is for all those management pages, so managing data sources, creating subscriptions, and so forth. As well, there's central admin UI experiences, which I showed you in the demo, right? Likewise, it has the ability to call web service APIs and URL APIs. There's a little bit of a change here. So if you're an application developer, you need to be aware that with the 2012 release, you now have to add the VTI bin folder, so underscore VTI underscore bin, to the URLs that you're using to call the APIs. And the reason for that is that now all requests to the report server have to go through the web front end. In the 2008 R2 and in previous releases, you were able to short-circuit things. You were able to actually call, because it was a sort of a separate service on its own, you were able to sort of go do a round end run around SharePoint, and you were able to go call the report server directly. And that was with a different URL syntax. So now in 2012, you have to update your URLs. For those of you using a Performance Point, that's going to affect you because the URLs that Performance Point uses have to be updated. I think they've documented that as part of their best practices. So the next thing to say is that, you know, I already mentioned this a little bit, is around alerting. Alerting is internal only. The APIs are internal only in this particular release. And what that means is that as an application developer, you wouldn't be able to go ahead and in a supported manner go call those APIs. So that's all on the web front end. The next big thing to think about is this proxy, so the RS proxy that's right on in the middle there. That thing is really interesting in this release because it now contains a load balancer. One of the biggest challenges in the past was that you had to deploy an extra load balancer, whether a software or hardware load balancer, between the web front end boxes and the report server boxes. That requirement goes away with 2012. Now it just is all handled inside our software, inside that proxy component. So it's all taken care of for you. And that's really, really cool. If you look at the app server box, which is the one on the farthest to the right, there's a number of new components. We built out the components for the shared service, or for the alerting shared service and so forth. But you'll also notice this WCF endpoint. And the WCF endpoint, that's this guy right here. Let's go see if I can go and mark up the slide here a little bit and just show you. Whoops. I guess I'm not able to do that. I'm sorry. We are getting close. So right here, I don't know if you can see the mouse moving around it, this little WCF endpoint. This is super important. This endpoint means that reporting services now uses the SharePoint internal WCF communication between the web front and the back end. And that happens over claims. And that what that means is that the user who comes into the web front end as a Windows user transitions to claims. So now if you have an integrated security report, you need to make sure that the claims to Windows token service is running on the report server, on any node that runs the report server process, so that you can go get a Windows token as well, okay? So that all of your integrated security reports continue to run. Okay, so that's a very important thing. The second aspect around that is that means that because it's that interface is internal to SharePoint, you can no longer call directly against that report server. The last thing to note is that at the very bottom on the right-hand side is this little auspicious alerting database. And that report server alerting database is new in 2012. It automatically gets deployed because alerting is part of our overall installation. And the key thing about this is that if you're familiar with managing reporting services databases, this one is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be a little bit more memory intensive than the other ones. And the reason for that is that that is the database where we process all of the alert rules. So when we go run an alert, it's going to go load the data into that database, and it's going to run the rules inside that database. And that's going to be a little bit more memory intensive. So you need to watch out for that as you're planning your deployments. So now the question came up, and I like the question that came earlier, is how do you actually get to 2012, right? So I think, and this is the question, you know, if you don't have SharePoint and you don't have reporting services, just go ahead and do an installation. But you know, sometimes you have existing deployments. Well, you can do a migration path. Just make sure that when you're doing a migration, you move both the content database and the report server databases. Together they have to go. Otherwise, if you just move the report server database, report server is sort of fun. It sort of takes a look at the content database, says, hey, are any of the reports that I know about in the content database? And if you point it at a blank content database, it will say no to every single report, and it will promptly delete all of the reports, all the metadata out of the report server database. So you have to move them together. So upgrade in place. One of the great things about our upgrade process is we have a principle which says when you start with a report or a working report server, after upgrade you will have a working report server. And so it takes care of all of the migration for you, so you don't have to do anything. So at the end you'll have a working 2012 reporting services. A couple of key differences. I've mentioned all of these over the course of the talk, but I just wanted to double check. You know, so the Windows service turns into a SharePoint shared service, and that means that you know you'll no longer see it in the services control panel. You'll now see it in IIS. The configuration tool moves into central admin. Manageability API. So we used to have this WMI API. That now becomes a set of PowerShell commandlets. So that's all available to you. The great part about the PowerShell commandlets is now that if you're scripting deployments or scripting management of your SharePoint farm, you can go ahead and script reporting services as well. And the last part is this, you know, this discussion about the URLs, where you have to use the VTI bin folder. Great. So let's finish with a couple of final thoughts. So we've covered a lot of territory in the last hour or so. And I really wanted to just finish off by reviewing what we saw. What we saw was that SQL Server Reporting Services really focused on three major investments and some renderers in 2012, right? We focused on creating PowerView, really making sure that business users are able to answer their own questions at the speed that they need to enable them to move forward. It's also a tool that helps IT so that IT doesn't have to handle all of those requests for reports or requests for data from the business users. So it's a really great piece that was missing in our stack before. Now it's there, and I think we have a really great visualization and data exploration and presentation experience around that. The second one is around proactive intelligence. This is making sure that end-user alerting is available for users so that they have a safety net, so they can be more proactive around the data, so they don't have to spend so much time viewing reports, and maybe sometimes they forget to see the report, so they are able to go ahead and have the information they need to get their job done. At the same time, we also enabled better rendering formats there so that those folks can also go ahead and consume the data. If they need all of the data in Excel, they're able to do that much more comfortably. And lastly, around increasing efficiency in terms of the SharePoint shared service application. So all of this is part of our overall effort around managed self-service business intelligence, right? So this is about providing business users the ability to get their jobs done, and also providing an ecosystem and capabilities for IT pros to make sure that they manage that, make sure that the data is correct, make sure that it's robust and resilient and works over the long haul. Right? So I think that's really where we've been spending our time and where we've been spending our thinking. So I'm going to end more or less there. A couple of other things. I promised that part four of the objectives was to give you a bunch of resources. There's a bunch of blogs. There's a bunch of related content. A couple of things to call out here. If you've ever had challenges with Kerberos, there's a session after mine at 5 o'clock, I think, which is covering in-depth Kerberos. I think that's going to be great. Sean Boone is giving a great session tomorrow on how to build stylish reports as well. So I think those are things that you can go still act on. The rest of these ones you're going to have to go and view online. I'm going to be at the Tech Pavilion. Most specifically, I'll answer some questions here while we still have time. But afterwards, I'm going to go and I'm going to paint some of those portrait things that they're painting down there for the hospitals. So if you want to spend some more time asking me detailed questions, asking me whatever you want, I'm going to be painting and I'm more than happy to answer your questions while I'm doing that. Okay? So next steps, there's a bunch of case studies, hands-on labs, certifications, and best practices you can go look at. There's a bunch of track resources as well. This is me. You'll get to my blog with that tag if you want to take a picture of it. It's also in the deck. Feel free to send me email with questions, right? Please be a little judicious about that because, you know, I get a lot of emails. But still, you know, if you have questions, you can't find answers elsewhere, go ahead and send me an email. And, of course, the resources that come with it. And where's my eval slide? Win something if you do an evaluation. Here's what I really think. I read every single eval. And if I didn't do something and I didn't make sure that you got tremendous value out of this session, ding me for it. I want to know, if you don't give me a 5 on every attribute, you give me a 4, tell me what I did, what I could do better next time. Because I think that when I do these presentations, I try to make sure that every year they get better and better. So just let me know exactly what you think. Okay? Thank you very much, and I'll open it up for questions.